Good evening, lovelies. Welcome to another episode of Coffee, Candy, and Creatives. My creative tonight is Courtney Gaines, American actor and musician. You may know Courtney from such classics as Back to the Future, Can't Buy Me Love, Memphis Belle, Sweet Home Alabama, and The Burbs. Or you could know him as I know him, as Malachi from Children of the Corn. Courtney has a new movie out called Queen Bees. He's starring alongside Ellen Burstyn, Christopher Lloyd, James Caan, Loretta Devine, Jane Curtin, and Anne Margaret. Queen Bees is available to watch on demand on most platforms, including Amazon Prime. Big thank you to 1000 Plus Stain Remover for sponsoring tonight's episode. You can get more information about this eco-friendly, bio-based, hard-working cleaner and stain remover at 1000plusstainremover.com. I use this in my home and in my studio. I use it in my car. If I had a boat, I would use it there. If I had a motorcycle, I would use it there. It literally works on everything. It's friendly to your skin, it's friendly to your surfaces, and it's friendly to the planet. Grab a cup of coffee or your favorite beverage, cuddle up with your host, Pup, and enjoy the show. For everybody listening, hello, I have Courtney Gaines with me. He's in a new movie called Queen Bees, which is hilarious. It's basically high school in the nursing home. and you also have some brand new music coming out, which is really cool. And it's all acoustic, the new releases?
Yes, I have a couple projects musically. So I have an acoustic solo record I'm putting out called Acoustic Gaines Volume 1. And we've put out three singles. Last week was our third single called Let It Ride, which is a very vintage bluesy sounding tune. And that just got picked up by an indie film I did last year called Redneck Neighbors. My Redneck Neighbors, I always say, who do you think played the Redneck Neighbor? But that was cool. They picked up the song. So I think they've gotten to a rough cut at this point. So I don't know when it's going to get released, but that's nice to always nice to get a song picked up for a film. So
absolutely. Absolutely. So it's My Redneck Neighbors.
Yeah. Yeah. And then I also have a band called Ripple Street, and we've put out three singles so far this year as well. We have two more to put out, and then we'll call that an EP. And the last song's called Would You, and it's much heavier. To say it's Black Sabbath-esque would be appropriate.
Oh, wow. I bet that hits. Yeah.
It's good. It's a nice, nice, edgy song. So it's nice. It's nice to be like acting. I like to do a wide variety of things. So.
Right. Well, why pigeonhole yourself to one thing?
Right.
You feel that creativity leading you in this direction, go for it. I mean, what's the worst that could happen? They hate it. Okay.
And it's what the band brought to the party too. That's the fun thing about working with other people is you're collaborating and that brings different things. Like my first band was a band called The Gathering in LA back in the 90s. And it was a female singer, and that's a whole different animal. And, you know, right. And it was an acoustic driven band. And it's always interesting. I love collaborating with people to see what they bring to the party and how that alters what you do.
Right. The Gathering, was that inspired by Highlander?
I don't remember. I don't think so. I think Shane O'Neill's her name, really good singer. She came up with it, I think.
Right. Well, I know The Gathering is also something in, not making a joke about Highlander, but actually in the Scottish culture, right, where they come together, you know, once a year to kind of catch up and to fellowship.
Right. So it's a group of people getting together to do a band. It was basically what it was. But yeah, and it was an acoustic band, so it felt like a kind of an earthy name. And we were doing an acoustic coffee house scene sort of as the metal scene was still happening on the Sunset Strip, which was just a totally different thing. And I always tell the story that one of the guys we played for was a place called the Highland Grounds. This guy named Spooky. He used our thing as one of his videos to get, he ended up becoming a DJ, a VJ on MTV. And he's the guy who came up with the unplugged thing. And it was because of what he was already doing in LA.
Well, the difference for people that don't know what acoustic is, I mean, basically you're unplugged. It's not an electric guitar. It's a standard guitar. I'm not sure what the actual acoustic guitar, maybe.
The guitar's in the background. One of them's an acoustic and all that. Yeah, it's just, it's coming out of the guitar. It's a totally different resonance and sound. We were very like interesting, this acoustic, the Gathering. Our drummer was never played a full drum set. The main thing he played was a water bottle, an empty Sparkletts water bottle. And you'd be amazed at the tones you can get out of that. And people loved all that. People loved that we were doing something kind of stripped down and different.
So acoustic just seems to, it's more of a natural organic sound.
Yeah, and for me, you know, I remember in the 70s and stuff as a kid listening, a lot of the music I grew up listening to was organic, you know, Joni Mitchell, I mean, you know, Crosby, Stills, and Nash, a lot of the stuff that was mainstream was acoustic driven. It's just, we don't hear that stuff a whole lot anymore, so I'm just kind of bringing back, I do all my writing on an acoustic guitar anyway, for the most part. I've always been taught, if it doesn't sound good on an acoustic guitar or a piano, you know, the bones of a song, then you don't really have a song, so... I've always written from that point of view.
Right. And it's, I think a lot of musicians and bands over the course of time have become more dependent on the supplements, the help that they get from, you know, electronics and technology.
It's just the era we're in, right? Everything's more, you know, everything here we are, we're talking via technology. I think, you know, the kids are playing the video games. I think they're able to create stuff right on, you know, the internet. It's just a different era. I like there's something real organic about acoustic guitar, and I like I said, some of these songs I've been sitting on for a long time. So it's just, I decided during the COVID, I was sitting at home going, okay, well, I've been talking about this acoustic record for a long time, so let me get off my ass and do something. And I started doing research, and I started realizing you can get a home studio system together now, super cheap. You get this little box that plugs right in the computer. It gives you thing to track your songs. You need a couple condenser mics and you're in business, you know? You're not doing the mixing and the mastering. That's over my head, but I can at least track my songs, you know?
That's super cool. I mean, I feel like with the acoustic, for me, just personally as a listener, I feel if it's just a singer or a couple singers with, you know, a guitar or a piano, it's kind of a more intimate experience.
Mm-hmm. And the songs I'm putting out for the most part are just that. They're more intimate. They're more about my own experiences, as opposed to like a band, like the song Would You. It's not a personal experience. It's just, it's a concept, you know. What would you do if you could get away with it?
Oh, well, that's a whole another episode. So Acoustic Gains is available. Is it on Spotify, Apple Music?
Yeah, Spotify, Apple, Deezer, YouTube Music. Yeah, all of those. Same thing with Ripple Street. You can find us on all those platforms.
All right, cool. So you got a lot going on right now.
Yeah, it's been a good creative time. And also, I got a bunch of projects that just came out and are coming out movie-wise, too. So we want to go over that list right now. We can do that.
Bring it.
So we got Queen Bees. It just came out a few weeks ago, and I only had a cameo in that, but I got to work with Anne Margaret, Loretta Devine, Jane Curtin, and Ellen Bernstein. So that was an amazing experience to get to work with those four iconic actresses. I had a great time working with them. So that's one. Another movie called Await the Dawn just came out on Amazon Prime, which was a surprise to all of us, including the director. But that's got D. Wallace, Vernon Wells, and myself in it. So if you're a horror person, that might be up your alley. And then last week, an independent film I did called River that I shot during the pandemic just came out. And remarkably, it came out in less than a year for an independent film. That's sort of unheard of. And it's a psychological sci-fi thriller, not sci-fi like in space. It's a very independent film, only five people in it. I play a character named Dr. Michael Glenn, who I serve a multi-purpose character. Like, it's only five. The lead girl comes home to her small town. Her mother mysteriously passes away. She starts having time lapses of like what's going on in her life. So she thinks she's kind of losing it. So I play, number one, I'm to their family and like almost like a surrogate father. Number two, she works at my antique store. And then number three, I start doing therapy sessions with her after the time loss. So I sort of serve almost three characters in one. What was nice about the character, it was a very earthy, very heartfelt character. I had a nice big COVID beard, hadn't grown out, and not a look anybody's seen, and really not a character anybody's seen me do. So it was a nice opportunity to do something a little different. I think these are maybe the types of roles I might start aging into now. So it was good. And the movie's good. The director, Emily Sky, she wrote, directed, did the cinematography and edited. So real auteur filmmaker. And she did a fabulous job of using natural light as a DP. Gave it a real interesting look. So it's, so far people seeing it seems like it's getting a pretty good reception. So and then lastly, I have a movie called Charming the Hearts of Men coming out August 13th. And that's a movie that's put in the 50s about this woman who was a debutante. Father passes, she inherits a big house and finds out she has no money. So she starts working at my diner. My character's name is Mr. Spratz. And she ends up allowing a sit-in during the civil rights movement to happen, which caused a whole big to-do in this town, which is actually based on a true story that then affected her to get involved. And she happened to be, because she was a debutante, happened to know the governor and stuff in real life. And she got the word women's rights put in the civil rights bill.
That's cool. And that was, what was it?
It's called Charming the Hearts of Men.
Charming the Hearts of Men.
And that's August 13th. And three of those movies are put out by Gravitas Ventures. So God bless them. They've been picking up all these, you know, middle-sized films, you know, middle-sized budget films. So it's nice that all these things are coming out. Some of these have been out. I did them like 2 years ago, but with COVID, kind of just nothing was coming out. And now it's all coming out. So exciting times.
Right. It's so funny because a lot of people I've been talking to that have films out now, or, you know, and they're streaming on Amazon or they're streaming on the platforms. The conversation has been about theatrical releases because so much has been sat on. Big movies have been sat on.
Yeah.
So for independents coming out with their great content, beautiful films, however, to go up against this juggernaut that's been waiting. So it's something filmmakers have to think about.
Absolutely. Two of the four are actually coming out on video. I mean, on film. Queen Bee's got a theatrical release, and I think Charming the Hearts of the Men's getting a theatrical release. So that's always, to me, it's always exciting. I'm old school. I love the idea of something being in the movie theater and seeing yourself, you know, your face 40 feet high on the screen, which is always weird, but neat.
You're like, have I always had that spot? Okay.
Exactly. Our profiles. You're like, do I really look like that?
Like, ooh, this is super cool, but ooh, at the same time. Yeah.
Yes. No, it's always weird seeing yourself on a screen and that large, but it's neat at the same time.
Right. And you always have the opening to look forward to.
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't know if there's going to be any kind of, there was something in LA. I'm not in LA right now. There's still for a river that I didn't get to go to. So I don't know if Charming the Hearts of Men's going to do anything. So we'll see. But yeah, premieres are always kind of fun and terrifying. It's always scary seeing yourself the first time in front of a bunch of other people you don't know. And how well is it going to be, good, bad, or indifferent? It's always a little terrifying. But
for you, is it more awkward or more scary thinking about what the strangers think or what your family thinks?
I'd say strangers. Yeah, my family's going to stand behind me, you know, no matter what. The weirdest part for me is just, you've made these character choices. You move different. You talk different. You look different, yet it's you. So it all seems very foreign at the same time. You know, it's like, this isn't me, but you're right. It isn't you. You've created a character. So yeah, I have to watch a movie like three times to have any kind of objectivity because I'm remembering everything that went into doing it. Kind of like having flashbacks of the experience. Versus watching the movie. So I have to get past that. So it usually takes me to like three times to get any kind of objectivity.
Right. I mean, that's me. If I'm editing a show and I'm listening, I'll go, oh, I'm about to say something really stupid. Hold on. I'm ready on that cut button. Yeah. But it's so funny with family too, unless they're total, and we can cuss on the show, unless they're total assholes, if they're supportive of you, even if they absolutely hate what you did, it's like they thought it was the stupidest thing they've ever seen. They're like, oh, but you did such a good job, honey. You did so good.
Exactly. What else are they going to say, right? But yeah, it's, you know, it's also weird. I mean, I taught acting for a number of years. And what's really hard is when students have families who don't support them and they don't understand how difficult it is. And when they do get something, they're like, yeah, okay, but so when are you gonna do a big commercial? You know, like what they value. You know, and they just don't understand all the meetings you have to take, all the auditions you have to do. It's a lot, you know, there's a lot of work you do up front with no guarantees that anything's ever going to pan out. And that's why they don't say to do in the first place. Like, just go get a solid job where you know you're going to get a paycheck, which on practical purposes is understandable. But if you're a creative, that's really what you are in life. You're only happy if you're being creative. It's that's how we are. It's how we're built.
In the professional field in acting, when your value as an actor or a singer is judged by, or your level of success is judged by, you know, like if I was an actor and I got that Zit Cream commercial, I would be stoked. I'd be like, yes, I am the Zit Cream girl. But your family or your friends are like, oh.
Right.
You know, it's like, oh, you didn't get the Pepsi commercial. Well, I was really stoked and happy about this, but now I feel like a piece of crap because I feel like you're saying that I'm not successful because it's this and not that.
Right. Yeah. And their judgment system is coming from a totally different place. So it's very tricky. It's very hard on people when they don't have family support. I was lucky that my family always supported what I was going to do. And they might not have been, they might have been a little surprised when I pulled it off, when they started seeing me on the big screen, but they never let on that I couldn't do it, which I think was good for my psychology, you know?
Right. You know, your parents have a conversation. It's like, I don't know. It's like, keep that shut up. Just good job, baby.
they never let me know they had a doubt. They just knew, that I was going to acting classes and I loved it. And they just kept scrounging the dollars together. You know, sometimes they'd run into money and they'd ask my brother, who was a truck driver, like, you know, can he help us this month to get him a class? He loves it. And they just all supported me, you know?
That's amazing. Yeah. And as a parent, and I know you're a parent.
Yeah.
Your kids are trying something, no matter what age they are, honest to God. No matter what age they are, if they're trying something, even if you have your doubts, you should support them and be prepared to be there if they should fail, if they should fall, you know, if they don't succeed at it, be prepared to be that person, you know?
Yeah, I think, you know, my personal point of view on parenting is not to make them what you think they should be, but to pay attention enough to see what they may be interested in and then nourishing that along in some way. Right. Like, it was clear to me with my son, you know, after doing like a lot of sports as a kid, that he seemed to be more of a solo sport person, like martial arts and things, more than a team person. So that ended up leading to, I also noticed he liked to run for some reason, just as a kid even. So I ended up, you know, getting him into cross country in high school. That ended up being the best thing that ever happened to me. He ended up being, number one, he had becoming very good at it. Number two, he had a really great team. They ended up winning a city championship. They all went on to run in college, and it taught him tons of values, tons of lessons about hard work and coachability. And all of that. And, you know, and you plant a lot of seeds in there about, you know, I believe in like committing to things, you know, what you're committed to will show up. And actually, after he got a psych degree, he decided he was going to occupational therapy was what he wanted to get into. And then he decided it was USC or bust. And I was like, that's not practical. You're supposed to like apply to 8 grad schools. He's like, nope, USC or bust. I was like, and then he got in. And so everything I taught him about commitment, he even when I doubted him, he's like, no, I got this. And he did it, you know. So sometimes those seeds you plant when they're little, they come back to, you know, full trees 10, you know, down the line. So
it's tricky. So he's at USC now?
He graduated, right, got everything together right before the pandemic. And now he's just starting to work. He's just about to start his first job. So I think he's really good with kids. And that's what he's going to work at schools and stuff with the kids, and I think he's going to be great at it. So I'm real happy. I certainly didn't encourage him to follow my footsteps unless that's what he really, really wanted to do with his life. It's a tough business, you know?
Absolutely. And it's so funny that so many actors are like, no, to their kid, like, don't, I'd rather you didn't. And a lot of times I think when the kids do it anyways, it's like you said, that's what they want to do. They have that drive. They have that don't give up. Then when you see the child of an actor you've known and respected for a long time, you're like, okay. And they usually tend to be successful because they've pushed back against I really wish you wouldn't, or it's a tough, you know, business. And they succeed because they push through, I think.
Perhaps. Plus, they're also already in the town and have some familiarity with people. And that could help. I mean, look, if my son had, that's what he'd wanted to do, if that's what was really in his heart, and I would have definitely, I would have just been like, you're going to learn to do it right. You know, you're going to go to class, you're going to study, you're going to, you know, you're going to learn how to be a good actor. Because I take this seriously. If you're going to represent me in this particular, my arena, you better have your chops together. And then I would help you get, you know, get an agent and all those things you need to get, you know. But right. I'm glad he's not in my field. I've dealt with enough rejection. I don't need to see my son dealing with it too, you know.
Right. And the funny thing is, as a young actor, you might have to be zombie number 3 or uncredited, you know, guy in cafe. Yep. And you can accept that you might just have a bunch of these little, to you, maybe piddly roles. But knowing that each time you get on set and every time you act, every time you interact with the people making film or TV, you're getting better.
No, you are. Absolutely. You got to build your resume and gain experience. You know, you got to train in anything you're going to do. And then at some point, you got to take all that training and actually apply it to real life. I mean, that's the test of your training and whatever it is. You can train to run a marathon. You're not going to run the 26 miles. You're going to run up to like 10, maybe 15 miles training over a year, you know, doing that kind of thing. But then at some point, you have to run the 26 miles and those last 5 miles are going to be hell. But you hopefully have enough training to get to the end of the finish line. And that's kind of how it works with everything.
I mean, I'm not going to run, but if somebody.
Yeah, me neither. But I'm just saying, if that's what you committed to, it's like a year's worth of work, and then you still never ran the real 26. The last part's all guts, you know. So,
what was that Simon Pegg movie? Run, Fat Boy, Run. Remember that? And he's just like at the end, he's like, I think he even had like a twisted ankle or something. It's like, oh my god, I can't. But for your son, with anything, occupational therapy, physical therapy, speech therapy, the fact that he has a heart for it, he's in the right, because a lot of into it for the money. And if you're going to be working with kids, and if you're going to be working with special needs kids, which is something that's close to my heart, you better have a heart for it, you know?
Yeah, no, and he does. And he does. He's found his, you know, he's found his right path, certainly for now. We'll see. We'll see where he is in 10 years. Things change dramatically decade to decade in a person's life, I think. I think we're completely, you know, our priorities and what our values are, things change a lot, you know?
Absolutely. I mean, where I was 10 years ago and where I am now is vastly different. Yep. But good for him. Good for him. You have two kids?
No, nope, just the one.
Oh, okay. I thought you had a daughter. I'm sorry. Maybe I'm manifesting it for you.
I hope not. It's hard work, man. Kids are hard work. You're serious about it. They don't, you know, it's all about them. They're not interested in how you're feeling that day. They're just, I want, I need this, I need that. And it's your job to provide it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Mine came into me the other day, came into the room, and he's like, what are you doing? I said, I'm resting, buddy. He goes, why? I said, I'm tired. And he goes, I'm not. And I'm like, well, you know?
Exactly. He's like, get over it. It's all about me. Yes. Yeah. That's what a kid is, you know?
And that's what you got to do. Then you got to get up and say, okay, you're not tired. I guess I'm not tired either.
24/7, 365, man. It's no breaks.
Rest of my life.
And then they leave. And then you're like, what did I just do with the last 20 years of my life? It's a very interesting process.
Your son, is he out on his own or is he still?
Yeah, he's out on his own now. But you know the emptiness thing's coming. You think you're prepared or whatever, and then you're still not. You know, when it happens, you still, it's a big, huge adjustment.
Oh, wow. So you're not in California right now. Where are you at?
In the Southeast. So I'm here in LA because, you know, there's the whole Atlanta Southeast market now. And I felt like I just needed to open that door. And that's where a lot of these projects that are coming out now, a lot of them were shot in the Southeast. There's a lot of work here too. So I'm just kind of do the bounce now. So just open them, because there's so much work now. It's not, everything's in LA like it used to be, you know?
Right. Atlanta blew up with the filming.
It's not just Atlanta. It's Atlanta within a 500-mile radius. There's tons of stuff being shot in Kentucky. There's a lot of film incentives there. North Carolina, there's stuff. And now New Orleans is about to open up again because they just got their incentives back. So it's there's a lot going on in the Southeast too. So, and I lived in LA my whole life, and it's nice not always have to be there and all the traffic and all that. I don't miss all that, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, it's insane. Oh, because aren't we just like programmed to think it's filmed in LA, it's filmed in New York City?
Yeah, but you know, you think about it over the years, so much stuff was shot in those places that's sort of oversaturated. And so people are looking for different places to shoot now, but it's really the film incentives that dictate it. I mean, if you can get, you know, 35 cents back on the dollar and you're spending millions of dollars, that seriously adds up. So that's right. Pretty much the motivation of the industry. Wherever they'll give them an incentive, they will go and film.
Right. I know a guy, he starts filming in the fall. He's filming in Winnipeg.
That's funny. I just went up for something that's shooting in Winnipeg. So maybe that just literally happened. So maybe... matter of fact, I shot the audition right before this. Maybe there must be an incentive or something going on, because all of a sudden Winnipeg is getting on the map.
Yeah, that's great though.
Sure. I mean, well, Vancouver was the one that started it all back in the late 80s, early 90s, and there was tons of stuff shot up there. I did a guest star on 21 Jump Street, and that's where they shot Vancouver.
Right. Are we talking the original?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, the TV show.
Holy crap.
Yeah.
That's back a little bit.
Yeah, well, you know, my career is that far, you can go back a little bit.
You're very relevant. You're very your longevity is good, because everything you've told me that is coming out or that you've been in is perfect for you, if that makes sense. The redneck, or the therapist, you know.
Yeah, and you have to, you know, you have to look at, I always say you have to be able to look in the mirror and see where you are now, not where you know, like, oh, I was, you know, so I think leading men and leading ladies probably have a much harder time giving up that age transition. But for me, it's always just been about looking at where am I now, what kind of roles are available now, and what can I do within that market now? And just be practical about it. Go get those roles. So I think that's how I mean, this is like, I feel like I'm in my fourth maybe transition in my career right now. Now kind of getting into the 50s roles. And like, I'm aware that if you're in a movie and you're in your 50s, you know, you have to be an established character. You know, you have to be somebody who's like the chief of, you know, the chief of medicine or the head of the police or the therapist, you know, people who are accomplished in their profession. Because otherwise, really, why are you there?
I can see somebody casting and being like, we need a pharmacist. Who do we have? Oh, I know. And then it's like, oh, well, we need the young party guy.
Right, exactly. So if you're in your 50s, you're not going to be the young party guy, right? You're not be the person finding yourself. You kind of need to be found already. You know,
Exactly.
that's the purpose in the story. Your character is to help the one trying to find themselves. So, you know, you have, like I said, you have to be able to figure that out. You have to be like, where am I and what kind of roles are available and what kind of roles can I do in that availability? So I think that's being able to see those transitions, I think has helped me greatly to stay in the, you know, stay working.
And I think that's a smart outlook, and it's probably what's keeping you busy and keeping you employed, for lack of a better word, is because you're.
No, that's not lack of a better word. That's exactly what it is. I mean, and that's how I've seen it for a long time. This is my job. You know, this is my job. This is how I make my living. You know,
Exactly.
and I approach it that way, you know.
It's not something you're doing for shits and giggles. You're actually like.
I don't have, at this point, I have no plan B. This is it. I'm too far in to turn back now.
Right. And you've got the music, which is good. And
No,
that.
that's always been like sort of the side note. You know, I've never had I was very clear at a young age I wanted to be a professional actor. Music, I just wanted to learn to play, and I just like writing songs. And so it was always a sidebar. But creativity-wise, it's been very fulfilling. So it's like, I think as an artist, you're always looking to the, I don't look to the film industry just to totally fulfill me artistically. It's a business, right? Like they spend a lot of money, they hire people so they can make a product, they can get out there to be successful. They're not going like, Courtney, what is it you really want to do to satisfy your artistic needs, you know? And I understand that, I accept that. But musically, I'm not under a contract. I can do whatever I want, however I want. You know, luckily we're in an age now. If you want to put it out, you can just put it out. So I'm just doing musically what I want, which is pretty much what I've always done musically anyway. So
Right, and you're so right, because with the social media, the different streaming platforms, I can't sing a lick. I can't play an instrument for nothing. But guess what? I could still get up there and record something and upload it because nobody's gonna stop me.
nope, no one can stop you.
So it's kind of freeing. I mean,
Yes.
10, 15, maybe 20 years ago, if you were a musician, what? You burned a CD. You recorded on a cassette tape if we want to go way far back, but you burned a CD, you mailed it out to all these little companies, you mailed it to the radio stations, you
Right.
did every gig you could find, you did Bobby's Bar Mitzvah, you did birthday, right?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, you know, you still, you know, if you want to go the, you know, the professional route, you still got to go through the gatekeepers. Just like in the film business, if you want to go the professional route, you know, you got to go through the gatekeepers. But there's no doubt nowadays, you know, for lack of a better word, hacking, you can hack the system in some way as an actor too. I mean, or, you know, you could put a show together like you're doing, like we're doing right now. There's nothing to stop you nowadays from putting stuff up. And there are people who are hugely successful on the internet, making way more money doing that than if they were trying to get a job through the system, the Hollywood system, to recognize them, to get a, you know, to get a small part on something. They're just like, well, I'll just do my own content. So it's, you know, content is definitely king now, you know, and there's nothing to stop you. There's nothing to stop you, you know, whether it be acting, music, or anything else. And that's, you know, there's also a ton more out there, but it's great that one can do it themselves now, you know.
And there's something for everybody, I think.
Right. Yeah, so I mean, there's some kid, right? All he does is open toys. And this kid's like with his dad, he's filming something. Now he gets paid a bunch of money, and all the toy companies send him stuff to, he gets free toys.
I
All
think.
of a sudden, they're opening the toys and going, I like this. I don't like this. So it's amazing.
Well, literally, I watched for probably about an hour and a half last night. I watched this woman shopping. And it was a couponing thing,
There you
right?
go.
So basically the point of view is the cart. I couldn't stop watching and I'm like, what is wrong with me? But yeah, there's something out there for everybody and anybody can upload anything. And the worst thing that's going to happen to you is that you'll get negative comments. You'll get hate comments. You'll get maybe, or you'll get, you know, your account suspended. So then someone creates another account and does it again.
Sure.
What a world.
Yeah.
Different than our childhood, that's for sure.
Yep, for sure. It's definitely good. All these platforms. One thing I say, you know, people ask about the future acting. What I'm a little worried about is, you know, the upcoming actors, the actors that have, like, you know, supporting actor careers like myself with all these Hulus and Amazons and this and that. It's not very clear what the residual income is going to be, you know, and that is, you know, what's allowed me, honestly, to keep going is when there's been slow times, I've got that Back to the Future check coming, or I got that Sweet Home Alabama check coming that pays the bills, you know, till I get on to the next gig, you know. If the residual income goes away, I think that the middle class actor and I think the supporting cast actor is going to go away. They're going to have a side hustle or they're just going to give it up altogether. So I hope they figure that out, because I think that's the thing that, you know, they've originally fought for in the unions, you know, created the union for. And it's, like I said, it's without that, I mean, you know, I would not be able to survive without residual income. You know, that body of work that I continue to get checks for is always, you know, the linchpin between gig to gig, you know?
Well, you'd have to do music full time.
Oh, there you go. Playing Bobby's Bar Mitzvah.
Yeah, there you go. And Granny's. Well, that is something, because not to get all into the logistics of it, but there is, you don't, as an actor, you don't, well, maybe you do. You go in, you do your thing, you get a paycheck, you walk away. That's the end of it. Some people get residuals. And then there's something off the back end or something like that.
Big actors get back end deals. They call them idiot points, though, because you rarely see any of that money because they're always saying it's gone. Just like the record business. So I was like, I actually owe more money than you made. You know, it's just creative accounting. But really, every time you see something on TV, every time Back to the Future plays, every time Sweet Home Alabama plays, every guest star I've ever done on TV, if it's playing, you know, I have something on TV every week, you know. And, but I think that's fair. If it's on and I was in it, just like if a song plays in the radio or a song is placed in the movie, they get something back for it. So I think it's reasonable that if I'm out there and they're using that content, that I should get some compensation, I think makes sense. And, that's the problem with these new streaming services is they're not very, very transparent about who's watching. They're not selling commercials. So like, how are they making their money? It's not clear like it used to be, you know, on the platforms, you know, that we're used to, that we grew up with. So, but if somebody's watching, if somebody's watching the content that they're in, I think that they should be compensated. You know, it's just that simple.
Well, I mean, every single streaming service has a subscription fee.
Right. And so what does that get divided up into all the content they have on there? I don't know. It's a different animal, you know?
Because I'm sure that they buy the rights to content.
So some yes, some no. I think that's why Disney, you know, was the first of the big five to make a move. And, you know, they were looking at like, wait a minute, we spent $20 million to make this movie. Now it's on your platforms and we're getting like pennies on the dollar for every time somebody watches it. And you took no financial risk at all. All you did was build a platform. So they went, I think it's time for us to buy up Fox and we're going to buy up Star Wars and we're going to start our own thing called Disney Plus. You want to see that stuff? You come to us. I think it was inevitable they had to do that. I think to stay a player. It's very similar to what happened in the record industry. So when everything went from analog to digital and you could start getting content online, you know, killed the CD, which was their big money maker, and they were costing a dollar and they were selling them for $15. It was like a no brainer. So at that point, they realized that what was king was the content. So places like Warner Brothers started buying up all these smaller labels with content so that they had this mass of content. And now what they do is how they make their money is in commercials, in television, in films. You know, my kid will be watching a movie. He'll hear a Journey song. He goes, oh, that's cool. Who's that? Oh, Journey. Let me go check them out. And then all of a sudden, you know, people start buying stuff from their catalogs. And that's really how they make their money now in touring now, where it used to be CDs. I think the film industry is under the same thing because they're not going to be able to sell DVDs anymore. That's out. So they're essentially going to need to be streaming services if they want to make any money. All right. So Disney was the first one to really bust a move. And now you got Paramount Plus. I think it's just a matter of time before Universal figures out what they're going to do. And I think that it's going to be interesting to see what happens to the streaming services that are out there, because I think the studios are going to once again control the content, which they should. They're the ones spending the money to make the movies. I think that's why you see like Amazon and Netflix and Hulu actually making content now. Right. They're going to have to ultimately become like an HBO. They're going to have to be making such good content that you're willing to pay for the service to see that content, because it's better than what you can get on regular television, you know?
So for the powerhouses, for the MGM, for the Paramount, perhaps the future will show us streaming services specifically for those projects.
Oh, I think it's already happening. I think they'll continue to try to, I mean, a lot of the, they also own theaters, you know, they also own networks. Like Disney is, you know, it's a conglomerate, right? It's like, you know, there's E Entertainment. That's also Disney. ABC is also a subsidiary of Disney. So that's why you'll see, like on HBO, you'll notice, if you really pay attention, you'll notice that most of the content on HBO is Warner Bros. Because Warner Brothers owns HBO. Then they're like Sweet Home Alabama, it's always playing on one of Disney's networks. It's either on E or it's on ABC or it's on ABC Family. So they're just, you know, they're paying themselves over and over again. You know, they're taking their own product, putting it on their own network and paying themselves, if that makes sense. But yeah. So it's already been happening, but they weren't in the streaming service business. And they're going to have to get in it. It's just because the streaming services aren't giving them enough that it's worth their time, which is the same complaint that the record, that the, you know, musicians that were established and making a lot of money are having problems with the streaming services, because they're like, wait a minute, like I used to get like a dollar a song, you know, a dollar a sale or whatever. Now I'm getting like 4 cents a sale. Mm-hmm. Spotify's like, yeah, well, welcome to our platform. That's how it goes. And that's why some big artists have pulled their stuff off the platform. And now, in fact, they do have to pay big labels. If you want somebody big enough on that platform to get eyeballs, they're actually paying the labels to have those artists on. They're going to have to pay up, or the big ones are going to do their own thing. So it's we're in an interesting time. There's more content, more things available than ever. But like I said, I just don't want actors in the future to get screwed out of what they should get, because, like I said, it keeps the support base of actors that support the leads. I think supporting actors is really a fair name for it, because that's exactly what we do. We sort of support them, you know. I've been in plays and things where I've been the lead, things like that, or even movies where you have to be in every damn scene, and it's like tiring. And you, when somebody comes in who's good, who gives you a lift, you're like, thank God they're here. You know, they support the situation. You know, they bring everybody up.
And you can work off of each other.
Of course. Of course. Yeah, that's exactly right. Like I said, they bring you energy. I got this one play, this guy ended up winning an award. He was a supporting actor. I'd be out there for like an hour before this guy showed up. When he'd show up, I'd just be like, thank God, I can sort of coast now while he carries the scene. You know, like he's got this. This is his. I just get to be there and kind of catch a little bit of a breather, get myself back in gear, and then keep going. So I really learned to appreciate what a supporting actor brings to the party, you know?
Right. After an hour, you're like, thank God, I can take a sip of water.
Basically, it's exactly right.
That's fantastic. All right, so you said Await the Dawn was the horror.
That one's on Amazon Prime.
Dee Wallace is from Cujo, right?
Yeah, Dee Wallace is, yeah, E.T., Cujo. I've known her from, conventions over the years, and this is technically our third project together. So she's a good actress, very, very good, very, very committed. Very focused. She's had a long and storied career.
Yeah, she's amazing. She's amazing. And I love to hear that she's a wonderful person as well.
She's a force.
Sometimes you really admire somebody and then you hear from someone who knows them, and they're like, oh, they're
No, true. I hate that. I hate when I meet somebody and I don't like them, you know. That's the worst. So no, she's a force. She's nice, but she's also not going to get walked on. That's the best way I can describe Dee. She's nice. Right. She's going to take care of, you know, whatever it is that needs someone getting taken care of, Dee will take care of it.
And she's beautiful as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
What makes you a good actress or not, but she's, I'm just saying.
She's a damn good actress. She's very much like, she's my kind of actress. She's method. You can tell, you know, she digs deep for things, you know? So I like actors like that.
I mean, let's stand on Dee for a minute. you're in a car, or maybe half a car, I'm not sure how it was filmed, acting as if there's this slavering, rabid dog. And you know, it may be like a pillow on a stick that you're acting with. You're freaking terrified.
Right.
And for us watching, we're like, oh my God, the dog's gonna get you. It's not a real dog.
Right.
But the fact that you, as an actor, actress, responded so well, you acted so well, that you made me feel like your life was really in danger.
That's what we do. We take things that are unnatural and make them seem real. Cujo, though, you know, I didn't see it for a long, long time, and I thought the concept sounded kind of dumb to me. That's actually a pretty damn good film, and you're right, it's very well acted. I was surprised how good it was, actually. I was surprised. I thought it was well shot, well directed, well acted. I was like, hey, no wonder people talk about this movie. A lot of times I don't see everything. I don't stay up on everything, but I'll come across something and I'll watch it. And Cujo is a good horror film. It's a good horror film. Good animal is the scary creature film, you know?
Yeah, because he was a good boy.
He's scary. He was scary. He starts drooling and stuff and looking crazy. I'm like, God, I'm buying this.
All right. But I mean, you're no stranger to the supernatural. I mean, you wandered around in some cornfields trying to kill people. I mean,
yes, ma'am. That's what we did.
I have to be honest with you. I probably have only seen Children of the Corn 3 times. The first time originally, the second time when I was first married, and the third time just recently, like I want to say last year or the year before, because it scares me.
The fact that you've seen it 3 times is good. That's more than some people have seen it, that's for sure.
The concept is like so terrifying to me. I already have issues with the walking through the rose, or I don't know if you've read In the Tall Grass, it was, but there's something about not being able to see was trying to get you.
Right. And what everybody that I've ever talked to who's lived in, you know, the Midwest with corn and stuff, they say what happens is you get easily lost in there because everything looks the same. You don't know north, south, you totally get disoriented. So it seemed to be a thing that, you know, they, by picking that, they tied into that people really actually could associate with. And the concept of kids taking over a small town and the concept of kids rebelling against their parents, you know, I just say it's like rock and roll. There's always, every generation is going to be rebelling against their parents. They're going to discover Led Zeppelin. They're going to discover Children of the Corn. Mm-hmm. That's why it keeps going on, because it speaks to that teenage angst, you know?
I think they took it to a new level, though, their angst.
Absolutely. But some kids in their fantasies, you know, think those things. They, you know, there are times everybody's probably said, I want to kill my parents. They don't mean they're going to kill their parents, but they've felt it. And that's what film does. Film sort of taps into those zeitgeists and takes them out into the biggest level.
Right. It's like, what's the most horrific thing a kid could, you know, a horrible thing kid could say to his parents? I hate you. I wish you would die. Okay, let's make a movie.
Well, Stephen King, right? He seems to have a knack for tapping into people's biggest fears, right?
Fears, and often degradation? They're darkest little secrety thoughts to where you're watching and you're going, oh, okay.
Just like the song I wrote, would you do what you wanted to do if you knew that you could?
We're gonna have to revisit that.
I mean, what does stop people from doing things is the consequences, right? And and right now the world seems so wacky after all this that people are not heeding consequences. And right. And people are, I mean, when I think about this whole pandemic time and even into now, which, you know, things quote unquote getting back to normal, people have gone so over the line. So many people if they do a number, I don't, you know, so many people are ending up in jail because of all the craziness they've done. Some people's lives are absolutely ruined by the decisions they made over the last year and a half. Absolutely ruined because there was like a sort of a break and they thought they could get away with stuff because the authority was, you know, and it's just like people, they thought they could get away with stuff. They just did crazy stuff. And now, you know, they're all paying the price bit by bit. And some of them are going to really, really pay a steep, steep price for their behavior.
Right. Well, that's like when you leave the kids with the lenient parent and then the Marion comes home and says, to your room.
Right. Right. No, it's true. I mean, kids get away with what they can get away with. That's pretty much how it really is. And they're always testing the parents. Like you said, who's the weak link? And get what they want, right? But yeah, this last year and a half, it's like people sort of forgot the boundaries and they made tons of crazy decisions. And like I said, some of them are going to, seriously, some of them are not going to get out of jail for a long time. They're going to have a lot of time to sit there and think about the choices they made.
At the very least, the lowest level of it, people have lost their manners. And at the high, people have lost their goddamn minds.
Yes.
And their morals.
Yes.
Their sense of right and wrong. You're absolutely right.
I saw people go off the rails. I mean, literally, people that we was friendly with that just went off the rails. You're like, who is this person? Like, I don't know this guy. This guy's crazy. Like, what happened? But it was kind of a perfect storm between the pandemic and an election year and the division that was happening. It was like a perfect storm for people just to go nuts. And they did, you know, they did. I was an actor. You know, I've spent a lot of time alone too, like, you know, in between gigs or whatever, you know, you're at home, you know. I said, people are not going to be able to handle this. I've been doing this my whole life, but there are people who a couple months, they're not going to be able to handle it after that. They're going to have to, and that's what you saw, people making, you know, say like, you know, the Sturgis motorcycle thing they do every year. Like, you know, that was not the year to do it. That was the year that everybody should have had, you know, better decision-making, but no, they did Sturgis anyway. And lots of people got sick, you know, and went all back to their towns afterward. These are adults. You're like, this is not responsible thinking, people. This is not, yeah, I don't get it. I mean, I get it, but I don't get it. I was like, yeah, 3 months and people are going to lose their minds. And I got to say, I was right. I didn't want to be right, but I was right.
Yeah. Can we just real quickly visit how the children have managed to keep their shit together better than a lot of the adults?
I agree. I don't think the adults have put a good face on it for the kids at all. I think the kids have been way more level-headed, unfortunately. A matter of fact, just to plug my band again for a second, the first song we put out this year was a song called, the second song was called The Great Divide, and I wrote it, and it was just my creative response to everything. And mainly it was saying, like, you know, they're saying you have to choose this or that. You have to be for gun control or you have to be for the Second Amendment. No, you don't. You don't have to be for, you can be in the middle somewhere, you know. How about sensible gun control where people can't have machine guns in the streets? Is that too much to ask? Right. You know, it's like, but it was a song just pointing that out, that this divide is what's weakening this country. Divided you conquer, right? That's any army knows that. Any good businessman knows that. Divide, you conquer. So that was really all I wanted to say about it, as opposed to getting on and having fights with people on the internet. I wasn't going to do that, but I had to craft a creative response after hearing people just spew for like a year. And some people were open to it when they heard it, and some people were like, we're not happy about the song. And I'm like, good. At least you watched it. You know, I have there's a music video up and stuff too. And it shows, you know, Black Lives Matter protests. It shows Trump protests. It shows, because all of that happened. You know, it's like, it was happening on all sides. There was the left wasn't perfect and the right wasn't perfect, you know, but there's a thing called, you know, the United States. And I'm not even that big about, you know, us being the United States of America. But from what I was seeing, I was like, we're tearing ourselves up here. This is not good.
Right. If someone's going to hate you for singing what is actually the truth, that's on them.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. But yeah, like I said, that was the way I had to find a way to craft. I tend to craft things, you know, through creativity. So it was a way to, I finally got to say what I wanted to say, which was really just like, we're beating ourselves up here, you know, because it's a shame today. Like, and then there's no, you know, there's the news is like, either it's like you're listening, watching Fox, or you're watching CNN, which is pretty far to the left. There's nothing in the middle. Like back where we grew up, like Walter Cronkite just told you the news. He didn't tell you what you should think about the news.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Thank you so much. I've been saying this for years.
Yeah. Let me make my own decision. I'm capable of making up my own mind. I don't need you to tell me what I should think. That's my problem right now. And I think the news, and I think, you know, the internet has a big responsibility for having caused some of this, because it gets them ratings, but it's not good for us as a whole.
Absolutely. So many people feel the same way too. And not to get all into it, but it's like, I want to watch the news. I don't want to know what you think of it, news person or reporter. I don't care what you think about it. I want you to tell me a person got shot. The person was a male. The person was white. Just give me the facts. And the same goes, I had a conversation with a friend, the same goes for teaching history in school, right? Because we're not going to get into it, but there was that whole right? I said, all I'm asking is you lay down accurate history, truthful history, factually to the children to let them know, whether it's dirty, whether it's ugly, let them know this happened. And their comment was, okay, but how do you, as a teacher, keep your own? I said, you keep your personal feelings out of it. You simply say, Lincoln was assassinated on this day. George Washington did this. George Washington Carver did this. People, dates, what happened? I don't understand why it's so hard.
Yeah, I think people are thinking nowadays that they have to put their two cents in. And I think it's, you know, internet and trolling. I mean, yeah, trolling, you know, I just say to myself, like, that's a perfect example. Would you do it if you could get away with it? Yes. See what happens when you could get away with it. All of a sudden, people are trolling. They would never say these things to your face. Never. You know? But because they have been doing this now for so long, it's starting, like, people are starting to say these things to your face. It's like it's all led to, like, this uncivil discourse that's, you know, it's crazy. People being told they can't wear a mask, and then it's some store, and then the store boy gets shot. Like, really? That's your response?
Leave. That's
your response? Leave. Exactly. You don't like it? Don't shop there.
Right. And it's not just, it's such a sense of entitlement, such a sense of stubbornness, and I'm going to do what I want. Well, shut up. If you don't want to have to wear a mask, that's cool. You don't have to shop here.
Or you can have it ordered and delivered to you. There's options here.
I want to tell them, you're absolutely right. It is your God-given right to not put something on your face. It is your right to do that to your body. But you don't have the right to bring your nasty ass into my business, because it's my right to keep myself safe as well. So if you don't want
to... It's also the store's right to decide what policy they want to have.
It's not the store's fault. It's not usually the store's fault. If it's we're going to name drop. If it's a Walgreens, if it's a Walmart, a Target, whatever, they have gotten the word from on high.
Right. That's what I was like, shooting the employee, shooting the messenger. It's just like, really? That's somebody's life, you know? Like, come on, man. That's not an appropriate response. I'm sorry.
I will absolutely go on record. I love wearing a mask, and I'll tell you why. Because I don't have to put on a lot of makeup. And
that's funny. I
mutter to myself in the store, and nobody knows.
You like the anonymity of it, huh?
No, I love it. And it makes me, I haven't been sick. I have not been sick with anything. Not a cold.
Yeah.
In over a year.
Yeah.
And neither has.
Good point. It's a good point. Yeah, I'm not, but again, the fact that masks are a political thing is just incredibly...
It's dumb.
Yeah, it just blows my mind.
But I like that you wrote a song, because you're right, it's not, and this is not meant in any way or shape or form, except that it goes with the phrase, it's not black or white. There's a gray... I mean, that's where I try to live. I try to...
I mean, if this country, we have more freedom than many countries, we're allowed to have discourse and this and that, you know, then yeah, there is a grace. There is something in the middle. And that's where, you know, that's where compromise lives. And any relationship, anything, there's going to be some compromise. That's what maturity is about.
Let's look at it. If you're part of a couple and you're both so rigid in what you like, what you believe, are you going to last very long? No. So now let's make that our country. Are we going to last long? No.
Right. Right. So exactly. It's like, does the bigger picture, you know, love, for lack of a better word, is the love become more important than your petty grievances? You know?
It should. We hope. We hope so much. It's just sad. And people say, oh, well, why would they want us to be divided? What does it benefit them? I'm like, have you ever had two kids fighting over something and you're sitting in the corner eating a candy bar and they don't notice? Because they're too busy fighting. That's why it benefits whomever to have us at each other's throats.
Absolutely right. And it certainly has been working. So we'll see where we are in the next few years.
We need to love each other more.
Absolutely.
And to take it back around, things like music, things like film and television are unifiers.
It's going to be very interesting to see, again, what, as I used my creative response, I put out a song in the world. It's going to be very interesting to see what the creative response is to all of this, you know? And if a movie or a song can come out that actually does have that kind of impact, that it can get people to look at themselves, because that is the power of cinema. I mean, for me, the most, you know, proud moments that I have as an actor, when people come up to me, you know, like having seen Can't Buy Me Love, and they like, I was a senior jock, you know, I was going in my senior year and I was looking forward to hazing the freshmen. And then I saw your movie and I couldn't do it. You know, or somebody comes up to me from having Memphis Belle. They're like, my father was a pilot and he never talked about the war. And then we saw the movie together and then he opened up and told me stuff. And then, you know, 6 months later, he passed away. I'm so glad we saw that movie. That's the stuff. That's the stuff that makes, you know, art, you know, art creates that kind of, so I don't know what people are going to be able to do, but hopefully somebody out there can make something that has enough impact for people to take a look at themselves in a good way.
Absolutely.
That's what it's going to take. That's what a real leader will be able to, you know, real artist will be able to do, not pick the left or the right side, but pick the side of, you know, like we said, love and you know, goodwill. So we'll see if it can be done in this climate. We'll see if it can be done.
Right. I miss the days when we were fighting over what color a dress was. Remember that?
Yeah. Let's good problems. Let's have some good problems to have instead of somebody.
Exactly. Let's have some fun arguments.
There,
so where can everybody find Acoustic Games?
Yeah. So Acoustic Games on Amazon and Deezer and iTunes and Spotify and all that good stuff. And you can find me on Facebook and Instagram. I still be on Facebook. I'm sure there's a few more than just me, but you'll always figure out which one's me, because all the new content that's only I could have will be on there. So
it's Courtney Gaines on social media?
Yeah.
Okay. And Rimple Street as well is on all those platforms?
Absolutely. And like, so you can find us on YouTube, music videos and all that stuff. And yeah, if anybody like what we were just talking about, go check The Great Divide out. I like the song.
I'm proud
of putting it out.
I'll put a link in the description to all this so they can. It's been a pleasure talking to you. Please keep in touch.
Very good. Let's do that. You take care.
All right. Bye, Courtney. Thank you guys so much for tuning in for my conversation with Courtney. Acoustic Gains Volume 1, Let It Ride, is available on Amazon Music. You can listen with your music unlimited if you have that option. Also, Queen Bees is available on Amazon Prime as well as other streaming platforms. It is a very funny movie. I really hope that you check it out, because honestly, aren't we all still trying to fit in no matter how old we are? Thank you again to 1000 Plus for sponsoring tonight's episode. Check them out. As always, please go over to beunique.org, like, follow, support my beautiful partners over there, because as I say, I would not be the pup that I am without them, and they truly deserve all the accolades I can give them. As for me, you can find me on all social media. I'm on the old TikTok, even though I don't understand it. I'm on Twitter as Pup Duffy. And you can follow the show on Facebook, Coffee, Candy, and Creatives. If you would like to sponsor an episode, you can reach out to me at pup4ccc@gmail.com. That's pup, the number 4, ccc@gmail.com. Or just reach out and talk to me. I'm always available to talk to you guys. Take care of each other, love each other, and I'll see you soon.